Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, wills or their absence are a bone of contention for many families, and most of us have heard stories of families falling out over who gets what when a relative dies. It can create permanent divisions and very deep wounds. And here to take us through the importance of making a will and the steps that you should follow is Andrea McNamara, who's head of private client law at EY Law. You're very welcome. Lovely to have you here with us.
Lovely to be here.
So when would you advise people should start thinking about making a will?
Well, I'd actually say it really applies to anybody who's over 18. So wills aren't just for the elderly. They're, you know, for anybody who is over the age of 18, if you have any assets in your name, particularly if you have young children, it's really important to have a will because you should be appointing guardians for your children so that you get to decide who would look after them if you pass away. And also, I suppose it allows you to determine who inherits your estate if you pass away. If you don't have a will, then there's a set of rules set out in legislation which will determine who gets your estate. And that might not be, you know, it might not be in accordance with your wishes. So really important, I think, to just have a chat with your solicitor and put a will in place.
And if you don't have a will in place, it takes a long time to sort it out and it can be very messy for the people you're leaving behind.
Exactly. I think, you know, almost always if you don't have a will, that's called when you die intestate, you're leaving behind more of a mess. So the administration process can take longer. It can be more complex. And also, if you are instructing a solicitor to administer the estate, it's generally more expensive for those reasons, that it takes longer and it's more complex. So yes, it's definitely cleaner and a better solution, in my view, to put a will in place.
OK, so then can we talk about tax? Because people feel that they might be very confused when they go in to make a will. Am I leaving people a problem when it comes to what they will inherit and what they will need to pay? So what are the rules around that, Andrea?
The rules around that, and actually, sorry, just to preface that, Claire, I would say that, you know, it's a really good point. In Ireland, in an estate planning context, tax and law really do go hand in hand. So you shouldn't just put a will in place without thinking, what are the tax implications here? And also try to think, is there anything that can be done to improve tax efficiency here? Can I try and alleviate the inheritance tax burden for the beneficiaries? So in Ireland, broadly speaking, our inheritance tax regime is that inheritance tax is a tax on beneficiaries. So it's different to, say, in the US or the UK, where it's an estate tax, meaning that the tax would be paid from the estate. Here, if a beneficiary receives an inheritance, they have to pay inheritance tax out of that inheritance. Now, there are certain amounts that beneficiaries can receive tax-free before they have to pay inheritance tax. And the amount that you're entitled to receive tax-free will depend on your relationship to the person that you received the inheritance from. So I suppose most commonly we'd see children inheriting from parents, and children are entitled to receive the sum of €335,000 tax-free. Now, that's from both parents, not from each parent. And it's also, broadly speaking, it's a lifetime threshold. So if, say, your parents gave you $100,000 to help you buy a house during their lifetime, and then they pass away and you inherit from them, you just have $235 left that you can receive tax-free. Mm-hmm. And then once you exceed your tax-free threshold amount, inheritance tax is charged at 33%.
So it's significant.
It can be,
What about a spouse then?
Spouse, there's a complete exemption for spouses from inheritance tax. Unfortunately, that doesn't apply to cohabiting couples or to couples that are unmarried, but for spouses there is a complete exemption.
So what is the threshold then if you are not married?
It's extremely low, so it's €16,250. That's all that unmarried couples can receive from each other. Now, there is an exemption that should apply in relation to the family home. So if an unmarried couple live together in a home and they leave, say one of the partners dies and they leave their half share of the home to the other, then the surviving partner should be entitled to inherit that completely tax-free because there's a specific exemption for that. Mm. But anything else that they receive from their partner would essentially be taxed at 33% above that €16,250.
Right. What is the response from some of your clients when they find this out for the first time?
Well, I remember a few years ago, I had one couple who literally arranged their wedding for the following week, which, you know, isn't, and they had been together for decades. And, you know, there's a question, is that fair?
Yeah.
But I suppose that's not for me to answer. But, you know, it's certainly a bone of contention among some people because there is quite a disparity there between how married and unmarried couples are treated from a tax perspective.
So is the threshold the same then if you're inheriting, say, from an aunt?
If you're inheriting from an aunt, there's a threshold in the middle between that 335 and the 16,250. The Group B tax-free threshold is 32,500 euro. And in that threshold, all siblings, nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles, grandchildren, they all fall into that.
Okay, so, that's the category B.
Exactly.
Okay, let's take some questions because we have so many of them coming in since we said this morning that you were coming on. This first one, my husband will not make a will. We own our family home. The mortgage is now paid off. We're both retired civil servants. He also inherited his family home 11 months ago and we paid substantial inheritance tax. We've three adult children who are unmarried. He tells me I'll get my one third share of both properties when he dies. So therefore, there is no need to make a will. That's what he's saying to her. I strongly disagree. Can you advise? So who's right?
I would probably be siding with the wife in that one, in that the firstly, just going back to our first point, Claire, I think it really simplifies the post-death process if you do have a will in place. But also, I think you mentioned there that the husband said the wife would get one third of the family home and one third of the property he inherited from his parents. That isn't necessarily correct. So if the husband and wife own their family home together, usually in Ireland, married couples own their family home as what's called joint tenants, which means that if one spouse dies, the other spouse would automatically get their half share. And actually, that would happen outside of the terms of the will. So in this case, if they own that family home as joint tenants, the wife would completely inherit the family home on the husband's death. In relation to the property he inherited from his parents, if he holds that in his sole name, which is probably likely, then, and if he dies without a will, his wife would only get two thirds of his estate. So anything that he owns in his sole name, including that inherited property, and one third would pass directly to the children. And actually, that's something that it's a misconception that I see quite frequently, that, you know, if people are saying, oh, we're married, we don't need to put in place a will because if I die, everything will pass to my spouse and then he or she can, you know, put a will in place at that stage and sort it out. But that's not correct. If you're married and you have children and you die without a will, your spouse would only get two thirds of your estate and one third would pass directly to the children when they turn 18. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of issues with that. You know, the surviving spouse might need the entire estate to provide for the family. Equally, if you have a third passing to the children at 18, say even if the children were to get 100,000 euro, that could be a life-changing sum for an 18-year-old. So, you know, often that isn't what the parents would want.
I'd love to know why he doesn't want to make a will. Is it the cost that stops people or is it just that they don't want to have to think about this?
Well, I think cost can be a factor, but, you know, the cost can vary depending on the type of will and how complicated it needs to be. But I think just generally, probably the most common factor I would see is that, you know, nobody likes to think about their own mortality. But unfortunately, death is an inevitability. So we do need to address it. Mm-hmm. But I see it all the time. People put this on the long finger. They procrastinate. They don't want to deal with it. But I also see all the time that if people do deal with it, when they complete the process, they feel such a sense of relief. And they're, you know, my clients always tell me, I feel like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders. I'm so glad I have this in place now.
Yeah. But I suppose then, going back to what you were saying earlier on, if your circumstances change, you make a will early in your life, you're going to need to revisit it maybe a couple of times.
Absolutely. A will should be an evolving document as you go through your life stages. But it may not, you know, that might put people off in itself saying, oh, well, then I have to go back to my solicitor every time and there'll be more cost. Not necessarily. It might be what I would usually tell my clients is just take your will out every 3 to 5 years. Have a look at it and see, does this all still make sense? Have any of my wishes changed? Have any of our family's circumstances changed? And you might say, no, everything's fine. It can stay as it is. But certainly, if you're putting a will in place and you have young children, you might include a trust for the children when they're young. When they're in their late 20s, 30s, there may no longer be a need for a trust. So you might amend your will then to just leave your estate directly to your children. So certainly your will would probably change, you know, over those kind of significant life changes. But it's not something that necessarily has to change every year. Now, saying that, I also do have clients that will change their will every year because their wishes change. So
it's completely dependent. Yeah. Right, let's get back to the questions. I live with my partner of 10 years. We're not married. We've no children. But we do have a mortgage together. We don't feel we should have to get married just because of more favourable tax treatment, which seems utterly unconstitutional. So how should we make a will? Do we make one will or two individual wills plus a joint will? That's from Stephen.
Yes, so everybody has to have their own will. It's a separate will. What you would often see for partners or spouses is that they could make what are called mirror wills. So essentially they say the same thing. They might say we leave everything to each other. And then if we're both gone, we leave everything to our children. But you need your own individual will. In this case, yeah, this goes back to our earlier point about the tax the difference in the tax treatment for unmarried couples. As I mentioned earlier, there should be an exemption on their family home. So if one of those partners passes away, the survivor should be entitled to inherit the family home tax-free. But they should put a will, that would only cover the family home. So they should put wills in place to cover the rest of their assets that they own in their sole name. And whether that's that they want to leave their assets to each other, or they might want to leave some assets back to their family. But again, if they don't put a will in place and they die and they're unmarried and there are no children, then under the rules of intestacy and legislation, the assets that they hold in their sole name, so outside of the house, would actually pass back to their parents if they're alive. And that might not be what they want at all.
Yes, or whoever their next of kin happens to be.
If the parents aren't there, it would be siblings.
But they also have, even if they make a will, they still have to abide by the tax rule
on
that.
So making a will won't affect the tax treatment, no.
Right, so there's only one thing for it, if they can stomach it, is to go out and get married.
If you want to get the tax exemption, unfortunately, yeah.
Okay. My sister moved back in with my parents some time ago after her marriage breakdown. It was only supposed to be a temporary situation, but it has gone on for a couple of years. I'm wondering, if something happens to my parents, does she have an immediate claim on the family home because it's now her primary residence? That's an interesting one.
Yes, and again, that's something that I would see quite frequently, that people think, oh, if somebody's living in a property with parents, do they gain some rights? They don't, is the simple answer. So the property still belongs to the parents. The parents, it sounds like, are letting that child live there with their consent. So on their death, the parents are entitled to leave that property however they want. That if they might decide to leave it to that child who's living there, they might leave it equally between all of the children, or they could leave it to another child. So the child living there doesn't gain any particular rights.
So if that situation comes to pass and the parents die, that person could be asked to leave that property whoever inherits it. I'm wondering how we should handle the care of our children in our will. It's not that I'm immediately worried about something happening to my husband and I, but I would like it noted who I want to care for my children should anything ever happen. Can that form part of your will?
It absolutely can. So if you have young children, as I mentioned earlier, it's really important that you appoint guardians, because that gives you the power to decide who's going to look after my children if something happens to both of the parents. And, you know, if that did happen, if parents passed away with young children, it would be an extremely tragic event. And the last thing that you want is a dispute ensuing between the two different sides of the family over who would get to act as guardians. So I would say it's really important, put a will in place, set out who you want to be guardians. And you could appoint more than one guardian. So sometimes people will say, well, you know, the husband might say, I want to appoint my sister, and the wife will say, I want my brother, but my brother lives in Australia. You could still appoint both of those individuals as guardians, but express a wish that maybe the children would live with the husband's sister, who perhaps, say, lives in Ireland, so that their lives wouldn't be disrupted. But then the wife's brother, who's in Australia, could still be involved and have a say in matters.
I think maybe that's another reason why people don't make a will, because those decisions are really hard to grapple with, aren't they?
Yes, I think that's probably the most difficult decision for people to decide, you know, who's going to look after their children. But again, and I completely understand how difficult it is to make that decision. But if you don't make the decision, you know, you are leaving more of a mess, because then you have a court deciding who's the most appropriate person to mind your children. So in my view, much better for you to decide that while you're alive and put a plan in place.
Right, let's get another one. My wife and I made a will many years ago, leaving our property to each other. We have no children. But since then, we bought a property registered in both names in France. So they would like to know if they need to make a will in France, or do they include that property? Do they adjust their existing will? Do they need two wills now?
It depends. So they could actually do either. And again, this is something, you know, just with the rise of Irish people purchasing holiday homes in Europe, this is something that is cropping up more and more recently. But they've two options, really. They could either put a will in place in France. And to be honest, I would usually recommend to my clients that they would put a will in place in the local jurisdiction if they have real property. So if they have a physical property there, the main reason being that it would simplify, again, the process post-death in that country. Otherwise, if they just included in their Irish will, which they could absolutely do also, it means that you'd have to go through the administration process in Ireland first, and then you have to send the will over to France, and the administration process has to be gone through in France in relation to the French property. And I think the French system, you know, is quite complex already, so it can simplify things to have two wills, but it isn't necessary.
But you might just need to bite the bullet and make the will in the country where you own the property, and in that way you're making things easier in the long run.
You're making things easier, certainly,
This one asks, will there be any problems with my homemade will? I find the charges for doing one again are too high. And are there any tips on if you're going to go down that route and do your will yourself at home, how can you make sure that it's legal?
Yes, I mean, I suppose speaking as a lawyer, I would not advise against doing a homemade will. Mm-hmm. And that's not that I'm trying to, you know, just tell everybody go out and spend
money on lawyers.
You know,
yeah, okay.
It's because in Ireland we have really, really strict rules about the validity of wills and the execution of wills. And if your will isn't executed exactly in accordance with the rules in legislation, it won't be valid. So you might see, you know, if you put it into Google, homemade will, you could get a template. What I would say is often those templates are from the US, where they have a completely different set of rules. So it's fraught with difficulties in that you're far more likely that there could be an issue. And if it can't be proven after your death that it was executed properly, then the will could be declared invalid. And either if you have a pre-existing will, that would be the will that would stand. Or if you don't have any other will, then you die intestate. Mm-hmm. So you've no will.
Can you give us an idea roughly of how much it costs to make a will?
It really varies hugely. So, you know, I am aware that, I mean, in the past, I think there was a practice that some solicitors didn't charge a fee because they possibly hoped that they would ultimately get the administration of the estate. I think certainly around the country, you know, there can still be quite a nominal fee charged for wills. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you know, might have a will, say, for a high net worth individual where it's a
complicated
tax efficient will. There could be, you know, a number of trusts in the will and you could be into thousands of euro then. So it really, there's a very broad spectrum.
Right, but it might be a case of shopping around if you don't have a family solicitor.
Absolutely.
Check and see.
Again, yeah. And I would say you're probably saving yourself money in the long run. And, you know, even at that higher end of the spectrum where I was saying it could cost a few thousand euro, that would probably be on the basis that actually it's a tax efficient will and you're saving quite a bit of tax in the long run. So, you know,
okay.
It's kind of money spent up front.
We'll squeeze one more in, Andrea, before we go.
Yep.
This one, we are a married couple and we're in our early 60s with two children, 27 and 25. We have been meaning to make a will, but we've put it on the long finger. There's now a complicating factor in that my wife was diagnosed with dementia in 2019. She's no longer mentally fit to make a will. I'm aware that I'll also need to obtain enduring power of attorney for my wife, but I'm pretty certain that I need to make a will first. Any advice would be much appreciated. It's a difficult situation.
Very difficult situation, yeah. So I suppose just starting with the last point, actually, you don't need to make a will first and then an enduring power of attorney. They're both completely separate documents. An enduring power of attorney governs your lifetime and it covers an event if you were to lose capacity while you're alive. Your will only covers post-death, so your will speaks from your death. So you can, and very frequently, a lot of my clients would put them both in place at the same time. I suppose the key issue here is this listener's wife's capacity and whether his wife would have capacity to put in place either a will or an enduring power of attorney. So the listener should definitely, I think, speak to his local solicitor. There is new capacity legislation in Ireland just in the last year. So, you know, while his wife may not have capacity in relation to some issues, it is now, it's a fact-specific and issue-specific test. So perhaps she actually may have capacity to put in place one or both of those documents. So definitely I would look further into that. If she has lost capacity, then I'm afraid she can't put a will in place. And she also couldn't put an enduring power of attorney in place. So it may be necessary for her husband to make an application for authority to act on her behalf. There are some new various applications that can be made in those circumstances.
Okay, but there's plenty that you can, that man can do in that situation, as
yes.
difficult as it is.
Yes, it is difficult. Although I would say, you know, just in general, it is better to try and deal with these things earlier rather than later. And this is kind of an example. It depends on the facts, but where it may have gone too far. And, you know, it would be better to try and deal with these things earlier if possible.
Andrea, thank you very much.
Lots
of
very
useful advice there. That's Andrea McNamara, who's head of private client law at EY Law. Back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.